On 20 Years of 24, we welcome Alicia Cuthbert to the podcast, and we thank you and appreciate your time with us to talk about 20 years of the 24 franchise, and we look forward to chatting with you tonight. So I guess I'll start. You were one of my favorite characters on 24. You had a big role on 24 for seven seasons.
Is that true that I'm
yes.
your favorite?
Yes.
I have a feeling that, like, see, people say that, and really they're like, you know how crazy your character was? I don't know if I was like fan favorite per se.
Well, and here's the beautiful thing. We've actually got it all recorded, so you could go back and listen to the other ones and find out he didn't say that to anybody else.
Oh, wow. Okay, good.
That's
okay.
True.
Okay. Well, then I really appreciate that. That's amazing. I really do agree. You're like one of the few that were like, you are my fave. More like people were like, you drove me crazy.
We loved your character, Kim Bauer. So
absolutely.
You played Kim Bauer for seven seasons on 24 from 2001 to 2009, I believe. So yeah. I want to ask you, how'd you get involved with 24? And what was your experience like on 24 working with Kiefer, and
I'll start with how I ended up on the show, which was kind of just a wild, crazy, fateful scenario. But I had just moved out to California. I believe I was like 19, and I had a network deal with Fox.
Okay.
So I basically had a 6-month contract with them. They were hoping that I'd end up on one of their shows to some capacity. And I was only really allowed to audition for Fox stuff in the TV space.
Exclusive, right?
Exclusive, yeah. Exactly. So I was really excited because I thought, well, that you know, they're obviously Fox wants me involved in some degree, but I didn't know what it was going to be. I ended up getting into, you know, the audition process. And back then, I mean, it was wild. I was going on like 3 auditions a day.
All within the Fox world.
Oh, just within the Fox world.
Wow.
I mean, that also included features, which were not exclusive to Fox. It was, you know, the gamut. But as far as TV was concerned, there was so much content, so much so much stuff, so much pilots being made. So I went on a ton, and actually going back, I remember because I was living for the first time on my own. And I mean, this was really my world at that time, and just wanting to not have to go back to school, and, you know, just wanted to really make it as an actress. So I was really so focused, and, you know, so the auditions were coming in, and I just started to get really discouraged at one point, because it was like, I want to say halfway through, it was like 15, you know, and I got so close, you know, and then it was always just like, yeah, you know what, it's not gonna work out. And then on to the next audition and on to the next one. And cut to, I auditioned for 24's pilot.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't tell us much about what it really was going to all entail, but that I was playing the daughter of the lead character. It was sort of action-y based 1-hour drama.
But pretty vague as far as what it was.
Very vague at the
time.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought, okay, well, here we go, another one. So it didn't really clock any. Nothing at that point was, no one knew what it was going to be. So it was just another audition, really.
Right.
And it was getting down to the wire for me, because I had given myself, you know, sort of 6-month window to make something happen in California, and then I was going to end up back in Canada and going to college. And so, anyway, I get to the end of this audition, and as I'm driving home, I get a call. They're like, you know what? They really liked you. They want you to come back tomorrow. And I was like, wow, that's okay. This is good. Another one that's kind of promising.
Right.
I get home, and my flight to get back to Canada is like I think the next week. So I was like, gosh, because this is like really down to the wire. Right. And, so anyway, they call me back, and then they call me back again. It was really a tough grind. I guess because I didn't realize how important this show was going to be for Fox, that, you know, it started to dawn on me that this was something a little bit more special, because they were paying a lot of attention to the casting process. So it was really narrowing it down. And luckily along the way, I was still in conversation. Until I got a call saying, listen, you're going to go to Fox Studios down on Pico, and they're going to do a final screen test with you. It's you and another girl. I actually don't even know who the girl is because I never saw her. That'd be an interesting question, actually, who sure. It was. Anyway, and it's going to be in front of Brian Grazer and Ron Howard and a bunch of other execs. So my mind was like.
Right. Yeah.
Shaking in my old boots. So anyway, I was terrified and I thought, oh gosh, here we go. This isn't going to work. Anyway, but I was like, I worked hard on the material and I went in and I read and just sort of Grazer and Howard in the back, just sort of, you know, baseball cap. And geez, this is like so nerve wracking.
Right. A little bit of pressure.
So much pressure. And my flight was like the next 2 days later. And then, so I'm on my way after the screen test back home. And my manager at the time called me and was like, well, unpack your bags because you've got the pilot and we're not going, yeah, and you're not going back. So I thought, okay. I was like, and you know what? It was going to be 2 weeks of work.
Yeah.
So I did end up going home. I ended up just shooting the pilot
right.
And going home and, you know, fingers crossed that we get picked up. But I didn't really know how all that worked. I was just like, I was so proud of myself that I ended up at least getting something before I left.
Right.
And then I got the call when I was over the summer when I was in Canada, and they said, you know, you got to come back because they picked you up for a full season. So
wow.
You're gonna have to move there, get an apartment, the whole thing. So, and then I started realizing what it was, and I got the actual script. And even when I read the script, I didn't realize the little tweaks that, you know, were going to be made in order for it to be the style that it ended up being.
Right.
In script form, there was no details of, you know, the ticking clock or split screen. I mean, that was really all Stephen Hopkins, who, you know, had kind of created this, like, how are we going to showcase what Jack's doing while Kim's out doing this? And, you know, and then he kind of creatively, stylistically created the show in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was never on paper that way. Wow. So then when the pilot came on air and we had this screening, it was like,
you didn't even know how it was going to look.
No. And I remember being kind of blown away because the intensity of cutting to commercial and you know, just that, the, you know, the music and everything that kind of came together. It was just wow.
I don't know if you know what you just did right now, but right now you told that story. The plane was like on the tarmac waiting, right? I was in an episode of 24 right now, and I knew how it ended, right?
Right.
But the way you told it, I was like, what's going to happen? The plane is there. It's getting ready to take off. But is she going to get it? I mean, Ron Howard and Brian Grazer. But it's like, I know what happens. And I still was on the edge of my seat going, well, Alicia, what happens next? Oh, my gosh. So good for you. We're on a split screen while you're telling us.
Screen. I know this is very 24. It was funny, too, because I actually mentioned, you know, the other very bizarre coincidence after that, too, was I was so excited. I got home to my apartment that I was renting during this process of auditioning for Fox. And I went back and I had kept every script or every audition, you know, page that I had gotten. And because I was just sort of like, I'd come home, I get it done, I throw it by the TV. And then when I got back and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the one I actually booked. And I went back to count and I had auditioned for 24 pilots. 24 was the 24th pilot I auditioned for.
Again, chills. Like the 24th show you auditioned for was 24. And that was the one. Yeah. Do you mind if I ask, what were you going back to study in Canada if it didn't work out?
You know what? I was going to study the arts, really. It was going to be, liberal arts. And I don't know. I mean, it didn't really ever happen.
Love it. That's amazing.
Thank God. I was like, you know, it's only now in my like late 30s that I think I would be actually ready to go to university and like actually be able to enjoy that process. You know, I think a lot of people go so prematurely, you know, when they're just not ready and they're kind of forced into it. And I mean, there's no way I would have survived.
Hey, you survived 20, you survived 24. I mean, at the end, you're still alive.
Yeah. Your character's still alive. And you're
which is something to be said.
And you're part of a show that has a big cultural impact right now. Like, I mean, who would have expected 20 years later the show would be, I mean, it's still unique out there. No one has ever tried you know, adapt in the real-time format for another real-time show.
Yeah.
And like, why do you feel like 24 continues to be very popular 20 years later?
Some things just transcend, you know, generations, and some stuff is just magic like that. And I think this, you know, the secret sauce was always Kiefer in a lot of ways, you know, super compelling, and the writing on top of everything else. I think Bob, you know, and Joel and Howard Gordon, I mean, just, I mean, what they kind of conjured up and created was just so magic, you know, it just, I think it's a combination of just really great, a collaboration of really great writers at the right time that really worked hard. You know, they really hungered down and worked hard to come up with some really brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
And then to have Kiefer at the helm, you know, a movie star at the front of the 1 hour format, you know, you had your TV stars, but you didn't have movie stars, you know, the way he kind of brought that. You felt like you were going to the movie theater every week.
Absolutely.
Right, absolutely.
You know? We've used those words exactly over the last couple of weeks. The idea of, I'm not watching a TV show.
Yeah.
I'm watching a movie.
Yeah.
And even, it sounds like even when you were filming it, you didn't know that was the way it was going to be cut. Like,
no. And I think again, and so the, and I think the third element is then, you know, you've got, you know, Stephen Hopkins, who did the pilot and went on to do a bunch of other episodes, but really the pilot kicked off what was going to be the style of our show, with our DP Rodney Charters, who made that happen. The two of them made that happen with that really cool lighting, and that really like film stylistic film feature film vibe was just like magic, you know, and it opened up the doors to allow people to think grander when it came to TV.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many shows that have like the formula and really they didn't want to do anything like that at all. So it really shows. So it was, and again, it was very much of the time and it was sort of, the writing was just so kind of creepy in the way that it was mimicking, you know, what was really happening in the world.
Yep.
Bizarre how that was all happening. And
absolutely. I mean, Justin and I both have the entire set of the series. I have a whole other set that I would give to people, and I'd be like, first one's free. If you can give it back without asking for the second one, it has never happened in like 18 years.
Oh my God. Like, I love the box sets because they're so like, it's such a nostalgic, you know, it's like, I mean, even people that are kind of like donate and get rid of their old DVDs because it's sort of no use, you still want to like the box sets are like, oof, you know, it's like those were so hard to get.
Yeah.
And I guess I will name drop, but many years ago, sort of when the show was still on the air, actually, I had gone to a party at Alanis Morissette's house. It was a birthday party for someone. Anyway, I got there and there was a lot of people there, but I happened to be sort of standing having a drink in the living room, and I look over and sort of on the library shelf, there was the entire box set series of 24. I've seen it. I've made it. I'm in Alanis Morissette's box set library. Yes. I was like pretty blown away. It was
pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because again, another Canadian.
Yeah.
That was cool. I remember, speaking of Alanis, I remember when I was in Nashville and people were like, we're going to see Alanis Morissette. This is 95. And my friends were like, we're going to see Alanis Morissette. And these are my friends that are into like your hipster kind of alternative. And I'm like, you're going to see that I Feel Your Love artist? Like, no, that because Alanis used to be like the super pop, you know.
Oh, right. Yes.
Before
Jagged Little Pill. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So my friends in Nashville were like all gathering to go see Alanis Morissette. I'm like, why? That doesn't sound like anything you would like. It was like, because their old stuff was like Tiffany, but then the new stuff was like so radically
very
different.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But you saw yourself at Alanis Morissette's house.
Well, I saw that beautiful box set. Yeah. I knew that box set with little Kiefer running like full motion running outside. The dark sort of like the blue version, the yellow.
Uh-huh. You know,
I could just see them all and I went, oh my God, I've made it. I've made it.
It's pretty amazing. That's another one of my questions, but I think you've answered it. Where were you? And you sat in a place and you were like, how in the world did I get here? Like, what got me here? This is so cool. But I think the Alanis story is great.
Yeah. Oh, there's many, many, many of those. But I knew the show was really popular when I started like going out and people would scream at me, Kim, you know, like refer to a character name,
right.
Kim, hey, Kim. And I would respond. I would go, yes, I would. Nice. You know, it's funny because I knew, you know, it's funny when we were shooting, it was such a bubble for us, you know. I don't know if any of the cast members had said sort of something similar to this, but we worked really hard and we worked really long hours. They were efficient hours, but we did work really hard. And I mean, we were there every day, all day. And when you were finally done, you'd get home and you'd be so tired from the week that the weekend was like recoup and then, you know, back at it on Monday. And this was for 8 months out of the year for however many years in a row.
Yeah.
So I really, that set and stuff, it was never like pinch me. It was sort of like, I didn't have anything else. There was like nothing else kind of going on in my world other than, and at some points I would actually go off and shoot a movie at the same time. So I did The Girl Next Door in between. I did Old School during that time period. There was a lot of films going on in between that. So it was a very, when I look back on it, it was so, there wasn't a lot of time to sit and take it all in. It was just sort of, these people are my world, you know,
Kiefer
and, you know, hair and makeup and, producers were all like, you know, sort of surrogate mothers and fathers to me, especially for me, because I was, you know, 19, 20, 21. It certainly kept me out of trouble because I couldn't leave.
There was no time. Yeah.
I lived there. I mean, there were days I'd go and, you know, I'd stay in my trailer all day and they'd wait for my scene and they wouldn't even get to me because they were, you know, there's a huge helicopter sequence that, you know, is taking forever. And, you know, so it was just hanging out. I was either hanging out or I was running around like a crazy person, shooting these really crazy intense scenes and, but having a blast. So it was just, I look back on it and I go, wow, what a time period for me of just taking it all in and learning so much about how to shoot a show at the highest level.
If 24 ever gets revived, would you be open to returning as Kim Bauer if you were pitched a great story?
Yeah. I mean, I think I would. I mean, I think, yeah, I would, depending on if I was available. I mean, again, I know how hard that show is to shoot and to film. It's not easy. So it's, but of course, I mean, I'm sure, again, I think Kim is one of those characters that could kind of pop in and out when sort of needed. So I would.
There are very few people that have been on in so many seasons, as many seasons as you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's a tough character, you know. Howard Gordon and I have spoken many times about this, but, and also he did it for Homeland, you know, with having to write for another female daughter character of the main lead and how tricky that character is to write, because they're facilitating the story and you're figuring out the heart of the main character through this character, where it's like you see Jack's heart through Kim in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so that ends up facilitating early on in a show. But as the show progresses and we know their relationship, it starts to get more complicated. How do we incorporate this character? How do we incorporate this young person in such an adult themed show?
Right.
So of course there's always the peril and then it got crazy in a lot of ways, but that's TV too. If you do TV long enough on one show, it's going to get crazy. You know, you start writing some wacky stuff.
Yeah. It sure sounds like you were up for anything.
I would grab scripts and pray that I would jump to my stuff first before and make sure that I wasn't dead. I mean, it was like,
well, yeah, I would think so. Right.
Just more about, am I alive? Am I alive week to week? Because they really wouldn't. I think they were also trying to come up with fresh stuff, so I don't know how advanced they were in their writing, but
yeah.
And also too, I wasn't like executive producing or anything. I mean, I was just there doing my job. So yeah, I would get the stuff and I'd go, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? But it was a great challenge. It was a great acting challenge. It was a great way to, you know, take what they gave me and run with it. I mean, there was some really beautiful scenes between Kiefer and I that I'll always remember that were so amazing. And he had a really great rule on set because our show had a lot of scenes over the phone. Right. We had a lot of, I'd be in one spot, he'd be in another, or he'd be in one spot and he'd have to talk to the president and get the president on the line. And, you know, so a lot of our show had scenes where I'd have to shoot my side of it on one day at that location and then shoot his side of it on his day. So the scenes were actually very much separated, but had to work cohesively.
Absolutely.
And Kiefer early on, maybe because of his own directing experience, knew that a lot of these scenes were important and that a rule that had come up was that we'd always have to be on set for the other person, even if you weren't shooting anything. So if it was a phone conversation, any off-camera dialogue, you had to come in for. So again, that made, again, days where you'd go in and it would just be, let's say, Kiefer on camera in a plane, and maybe I'm on the phone, you know, kind of hiding behind him,
right,
doing those actual lines for him and having that, you know, real person connection instead of just, you know, maybe a script supervisor, you know, dialogue. It wasn't
somebody generic reading the line. It was the actual person that you were talking
to. And a lot of times, listen, when it's not super important and the other actor can kind of, oh no, you know what, Paul, don't worry. You don't have to be here for that. Oh no, you know, that's all good. But there was actually, you weren't even allowed to suggest that you weren't coming in.
That was the rule.
And it went that way for, I don't know, as long as I was there, that was the rule.
Boy. Yeah. I mean, it seems like that would make all the difference because as you said, so much of the show was interaction and phone calls to each other when cell phones are really kind of a new thing still, right?
Exactly. So if you go back and if you're watching right now, people who are listening to this, if they're in the midst of, you know, a season or whatever, I mean, every single phone conversation, that person was actually on a phone next to them doing the lines. And we were really doing those scenes together. And particularly the one that was so important for me was the scene where I think Kiefer's character is about to die and he calls me and tells me that he's taking down a plane and I think I'm crying somewhere in the forest sometimes. But he's in a plane and he has to call me and I'm actually right behind the seat of the plane that I'm literally behind him during that entire scene. And on the flip side of it, in the field, he was right there off camera doing all the stuff, all the dialogue. So yeah, he's incredible. He had a lot of great rules that I think, like I said, the secret sauce and why it's so amazing has a lot to do with him.
I mean, my kids were infants when I first got hooked on 24. Mm-hmm. I went and rented them from Rogers Video in Canada. Right. I rented the first RIP, but I rented RIP. I rented the first two discs. I watched two episodes and I went, and I think I was hooked pretty much when the cars passed at the end of the pilot, when you're going one way and Terry's here and you miss each other. And, I was like, I'm hooked. This is it. I took them back to Rogers Video that night. I drove to Walmart. I paid full price.
Oh, yeah.
I hate paying full price, but I paid full price because I was like, this show is so different already. I have to own it. I can't just borrow it and come back and get it a couple times. I had to own it.
It was very much the beginning of, you know, that idea that you had to... They wrote it in a way that you had to tune in the next week. And imagine now it's like, that's so important on streaming shows because you want, you know, the big criteria is that you want, once that episode ends, you've got to see the next one. Right. And imagine having to do that to an audience, not just a click after 3 seconds, but next Tuesday.
Or the six week breaks.
Oh my God. It was like, imagine how edge of the seat it had to be.
I envy Justin because Justin didn't have to do that. He got hooked later in the series, but But I remember the first 6 weeks, we'll be back after Christmas. And I'm like, what?
What?
Chappelle just got what? And I got to wait 6 weeks to find out what how Kim's doing?
The only nice thing about that is that, you know, when you think about how much time was spent filming it, you know, in eight-month period. And when you have to understand, when we got to, especially my stuff, because I was outside for a lot of exterior stuff, when you got to the hours of the night of the, you know, the season, I was doing night shoots for 5 months straight. So I slept during the day and I'd film all night.
Oh, wow.
So we could get the hours of the night that were dark, right? So there was no way to do exteriors during the day, obviously.
You were a night owl.
So it was 5 months of, you know, a year. It was shooting night shoots. And so it's funny when you think about the work and the time and the effort, like imagine now, like something like The Crown, I would equate it to like, you know, the hours of that and how much goes into that. And people will binge it within 2 days. So eight months of work, 10 months of work is literally watched in 2 days or 3 days. I don't know how fast people do it, but you know, it's like, I think if I was putting that kind of time in, like again, like with 24, I'd be like, so I'd be happy people would be into it. But at the same time, it was so nice that they had to kind of wait. Like it was like, well, at least all my hard work and effort isn't getting like literally crushed in a 24-hour, 48-hour period.
Right. Enjoy it like Alanis would enjoy it.
Yeah. I got hooked on 24 in 2009. It was April 2009. I was in grade 11. And at the time, I was living across the street.
Okay, you're super young. Keep writing.
Yes. I was living across the street from my best friend. So we rented the DVDs from, it was called Steel City Video at the time, which is like down the street. And we rented the first season. And my best friend and I were very hooked that we just kept going back to Steel City Video to rent it. And I remember, so we watched all seven seasons at the time, in like maybe 4 or 5 months. But there was a period, is it June? So it was the last month of school. And my friend's mom basically banned us from watching 24 for the final month of school because she wanted us to focus on exams. And so
I love this story.
So I remember my friend was like, so my friend's mom took the DVDs from my friend. She kept it in her room. And one night my friend was like, Mom, can I have the DVDs? I just want to hold on to them. And she was like, for what? And he's like, I just want to hold on to them. So she gave him the DVDs. And my friend snuck me over every night when his parents went to bed. And we snuck in 24 because we couldn't go a month without watching it. So we watched it almost every night. And I remember if there was a night I couldn't watch it, my friend would get so pissed if I couldn't make it one night, if I had other stuff. So we got so addicted. And ever since 2009, we loved 24. I mean, I was
24 is contraband. 24 yes. is contraband. It's such a, I love that story.
I did an interview, a phone interview with Howard Gordon in 2013. When I graduated from the college, I studied television broadcasting.
Nice.
And so ever since 2013, too, I've been in touch with Howard Gordon from time to time. Every time there was a 24, talk about bringing 24 back.
I had a few calls along the way of, oh, we might have a movie. Oh, we might have this. And I said, well, just keep me posted. Keep me posted. So nothing really happened. And like I said, those were sort of reboots and things. And then there was like the one with Keeper, I know. And then, but yeah, I hadn't really watched all of it. And to be honest, I haven't watched all of 24. I haven't. Sure. I haven't seen every single episode, which is kind of wild also to think. But, and does the production value hold up?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is. We own the sets and I'm still at 4 a.m. watching on Disney Plus as if I'd never seen them before. Wow. I used to have this game when I was on Netflix called 24 Roulette, where I'd close my eyes and I'd just scroll through a bunch. And then whatever I land on, I would watch that episode. But you can never watch one episode. I had to watch three or four.
Oh yeah, because every single one ended in such a cliffhanger. It was like you had to keep going. It just sucked you in, right? It was
absolutely.
Just, Yeah, I have really great, like I said, and again, such brilliant actors, you know, aside from Kiefer, who obviously was a huge mentor, but I got to shoot with Dennis Hopper. I mean, that was so,
you know,
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, film in 2001, film actors didn't do TV, right?
No, I mean,
Dennis Hopper shows up at the end of season one, and then all of a sudden, now everybody's got a TV show that are film actors.
Yeah.
I mean, the impact of 24 to me is so clear.
Yeah.
Elevating the medium to a degree that all of a sudden everybody's like, we need to do TV.
Yeah. And you know, it was funny and it was weird because at that time when Kiefer was like, you know, winning every award and we were at every, you know, we were invited to every award party or you could think of under the sun. And it was having that moment. It was like, everyone was like, oh, there's no such thing anymore as like movie actor and TV actor. It's all the same. It's like, that's such BS because it was different.
Right.
It was
right.
There were film actors and there were TV actors.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
I don't think it was as, you know, as together as it was until 24.
I agree.
I think Kiefer really made it cool and okay and showed and proved that it was successful. And then it blew up because movie actors were going, wow, you can make a lot more money and you could have a gig for a lot longer if you can do what he's doing. I mean, he really was doing the dream, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Including Donald Sutherland, who wound up on Commander in Chief a couple years after, you know?
Right, exactly.
Like it was one of those things where it was like, when you see a movie like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where it's all about this film actor who then goes to TV, it's like he takes a step down.
Yeah, there was always that stigma. There was always that thing where it's like, that's a different medium. That's like, you know, you got your theater actors, you got your TV actors. Yeah, I mean, even within TV, you've got your sitcom actors.
Right.
You got your 1 hours, you got your half hour single cameras. You know, everyone's doing their own thing. I mean, I'm glad I got to try everything, but But yeah, he really made it okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you get John Voight on the show. I mean, it was just wild, like, to think of these brilliant actors that came on after that, you know,
absolutely.
I got to cross paths with and work with. I mean, Sherry Jones. I mean, man, there was just so many great people.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that you mentioned made me think, and I don't think very often, but it made me think. When I started watching 24 in 2001, 2002, my kids were infants.
Right.
And then by the time, with each repeated viewing, I didn't even realize until you said it, I'm watching it with different eyes because now I've got, my kids are Kim's age.
Right.
And some of the things we're going through, maybe not exactly the same, but there's...
Worst nightmare.
But I tear up differently at different scenes. You mentioned some of the scenes you did with Kiefer. When I watch those scenes now, I'm a dad with adult kids and I'm like, oh, How would I handle that? Like it's I'm not seeing it the same way I did 20 years ago or 15 years ago.
Yeah. I think for some people who were younger at that time, it was like my character just made the stakes higher.
Right. Yes.
But if you were watching it at the time and had children, especially daughters, it brought in a heart to it that, you know, you couldn't help but relate to. I mean, I'm a parent now as well, and it's sort of like, I don't know. I was just, you know, it's something about when you have children, it's like, did I not have feelings before? I was a cold, cold person before. I had a daughter and now the water works.
Yeah. I'm willing to admit that. I cry more watching 24 now than I ever did.
It's ridiculous. I was like, I think I went on like a really like maybe like a 10-year no cry streak, and then I had her, and I was like, I can't go 24 hours without a tear. I don't know. You have children, and you just become like a little mushy ball of emotions. It's like very strange.
Yeah.
But we definitely tapped into that when we were shooting, and I could see it now, and even so much now as a mother. But you know, looking back at the writing and going, oh, of course, like every time she would find herself in this, you know, in this peril, it was like, you know, and then the stuff with me and, you know, Leslie Hope, Terry, I mean, oh my God, it's so heavy. you know, in the midst of filming that, for me, it was more just like trying to make it believable that we were in this really intense scenario, but like to allude to the fact that these two were going to be like abused. I'm like, oh my God. Like, if you think about it, it is like, it's so gut wrenching, the stuff. It's really, it is. Some of it's really tough, really tough. I'd have a hard time watching that now as a mom.
Absolutely. And she spoke so highly of that time when I talked to her.
Oh,
she,
really?
She enjoyed that time, but she said the same thing. The heavy things that we did, it's hard to believe that we did them, and then we were able to do those and get them on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many like deep things going on. And she said, you don't normally kill the pregnant wife on a show.
No.
That probably would not fly now. I don't know if it flew then.
That's when we knew no one was safe.
Right. Right. You know, yeah.
That script came and there was like a quiet. And then there was obviously, you know, Leslie and I were filming a lot of stuff together. All of our stuff was together, really.
Yep.
And it was sad because we, you know, I think she thought, you know, we were going to be doing this for a while, you know? So it was like, yeah, it was sad. It was there was a quiet to it, but then there was also like, oh, they're not messing around.
Right.
Like no one is safe. Right. I remember Carlos going, everyone's scared now. Like, everyone doesn't know if they're going to have a job next week. You think you get on a show, pilot gets picked up, you're a regular.
Right.
Until that show gets canceled or it's done,
you're
good. So, you know, so but not on our show.
So what you're saying is you didn't have the same fears in these years.
You didn't have
the same apprehensions with every episode of Happy Endings that the next one might be the last one for you?
Oh, that there was a fear there too, but for different reasons.
This is the Blu-ray box set,
which
I think my wife got it imported for me for Father's Day. And Justin talks about like hiding the DVDs and like holding them. That's what I do with this set because I love
Happy Endings box set.
I do not hide my love for this show. This show is amazing.
Oh my God. Well, no, that was a different scary situation because you could just feel that we were always just hanging on by a thread with the studio and the network, you know, just, you know, our time slot kept, you know, moving around. And I think we would have been more successful if we would have come, if this show, if Happy Endings would have happened now on, you know, like a Netflix or a Hulu or, you know, I think there would have been no pressure. We could have just done what we wanted to do, but listen, we got 3 great years out of it. And,
and the table read. Love the table read. Love the table read.
And the table read. Oh, it's such a silly show.
It's absolutely silly. And the chemistry between the six of you is like, it's that there's another show where there's 6 people, 3 guys and 3 girls. And it doesn't have the same chemistry that the six of you had. It was I think I only knew you.
Yep.
Well, I knew Damon Jr. from some stuff. But I didn't know his timing. I could go.
Oh my God, his physical comedy is like,
all 6 of you had that. All 6 of you brought to the table this thing, and it was magic. And as much as I go, it was 3 seasons. At least it wasn't like 1 season and then you were gone. But I always got the impression that it was always dangling by a thread. That you, I remember between 2 and 3, wondering if 3 was going to happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was always touch and go all the time. I actually, you know, to bring it back to 24, I actually tried to get Kiefer on the show. I tried to get Kiefer to play my father on Happy Endings, or it was going to be some character. They kept trying to write it, whatever he wanted to do. They were like, just get him on.
Right.
And reached out to him and he said, oh, I'll think about it. And then ultimately I don't think it was his cup of tea. But I also don't. I also think he was busy working on his other show. So I.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Schedule
wise, maybe. But I also he probably watched one episode and went, no.
You know, though, he did Zoolander 2. So I will.
He did
at the beginning of Zoolander 2. You've got to see it. You will love it.
Okay, I'm gonna check that out because he was like, I think he was like, oh yeah, okay, I heard about it. I heard it's doing good, yeah. But I think he probably went. No.
as an actor, on 24, for example, when they killed off a character, was that done strictly for audiences, or sometimes in TV shows when a character leaves, it's because of contract negotiations or.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I don't think any of the write-offs characters dying or getting killed had anything to do with contracts. I mean, not that I'm aware of, because I think unless there were, I'm sure there were occasions along the way where characters knew they were coming in to play a character that was eventually going to end up dying for some reason. You know,
there, okay.
I would imagine that along as the as people started to realize what the show was,
right,
you know, I'm sure actors came on with less of a panic, knowing, hey, you know what, we want a 5-episode arc from you, and it's going to end this way. They probably knew that structurally, but when the show first started, when we had all these regulars, like, you know, Dennis Haysbert coming in playing the president, you know, it was one of those things where. At one point, everyone was like really secure about it. And I was secure that I was the daughter. I wasn't going, where was I going to go? Right. And,
right.
You know, Leslie Hope's like, I'm the main character's wife with a daughter. Where am I going? Right. And so there was this comfortability that we were like, we're the regulars. And I'm sure people are going to come in and out. But when main characters started dropping, it was like, and no one felt like anyone was safe in the sense of, these writers are willing to do whatever it takes to entertain the audience.
Okay. And
if that meant losing a main character, that meant losing a main character. And so it was kind of stunning for us in the beginning. But as the show continued on, we started realizing, but it was never, I don't think anyone was ever killed off for contract reasons. No. But it's funny. There was a lot of times of like, there was so much character killing that I know that like there was a, and you should ask Kiefer about this. I think there was a board where it was like, how many kills we had versus
right.
other
yes.
characters.
There's a list out there. I think it showed up in the Live Another Day. I think it shows up on a screen, all of the list of all his.
Okay.
And they're right from season like, one.
I feel like I had one kill. I think
you
I had
did.
Maybe, I think like Billy Burke, did I kill him?
You did very well, actually.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I'll take that. I do remember killing him. But do you know the story about Nina getting killed by Kiefer, obviously, but that was originally written for Kim to kill her? But he comes in and does it for me.
But the original plan was for you to do it?
It was originally scripted for me to enter that space. I think it was in CTU. It was you.
It was.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Okay. And I go in and I get her and, you know, I have it lined up. And as it was scripted, I take her out.
Yeah.
And Kiefer came to set that day and felt like, and I mean, he can do this. He was, you know, executive producer, whatever. I mean, he was the guy.
Right.
And he just said, you know, I think that as much as it would be important for Kim to get revenge over, you know, Nina killing her mother.
Right.
It also, you know, she was kidnapped. My daughter was kidnapped. I feel like I need to be the one to do this. And he rewrote it while we were filming it.
Wow.
And wow. Wow. So
he went into hair and makeup, got ready and came out and ended up taking it and killing that character off on the actual day. So I should have one more kill.
You came in ready to kill her. You were gonna do it.
I was very ready, guys.
Were and you
it
disappointed?
Got stolen. You know what? I was a little disappointed.
Yeah.
But ultimately, again, like things get rewritten so many times, and I got over it. But I did. I think there was something in the vengeance of, you know, my character leading up to that moment that was like, gosh, I really, really wanted that one, you know, but I understood the creative side of that and what that meant and how that needed to happen for him. So, you know, for the story. So I understood that, but man, right. I almost had Nina. Damn it.
You almost had two. Oh, we got a damn it. That's amazing. That's amazing. Yes. You know, you wanted that kill. I mean, yeah, I can see the reasons. I always hear a lot of parallels between 24 and Saturday Night Live, where things can change right up until the last minute. I mean, stuff gets changed and drops and
it was very much, there was so much respect for the writers because it was such brilliant writing that, I mean, dialogue was like to a T. There were no veering off. There was no improv. So you can understand after when I finished that, I was really anxious to try to get into comedy and to also start, you know, getting involved in stuff that had more to do with improv. And because really I had been so structurally stuck to this intense dialogue and it being verbatim, you know, which was needed. I mean, there was no room for, you know, trying to test the waters of any sort of like, what's up, dad? You know, it was a nice contrast to do happy endings after that. That was,
sure.
It was great.
Well, you're speaking of dialogue, is there a line that you remember that you did on 24 that sticks with you?
Oh God, no.
There's so many great ones. The one line that's associated with you that is around the Billy Burke shooting, and I should try to remember his name on the show. His real name is Billy Burke.
Gary.
Yes, Gary. Matheson. Gary Matheson.
Oh yes, in season two, yes.
One of my favorite lines, unfortunately, wasn't uttered by you. But it was Kiefer on the phone with you. And he says, did you shoot him? Yes. Shoot him again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
Make sure you get him.
Make sure you get him. That bugs me about horror films. I watch horror films. I'm like, you kicked him once and then you ran away. What are you kidding? You got to get him. I said, there's things I learned from 24. One is you do exactly what Jack says. You shoot him again. The other thing is always back up all your hard drives. Don't just make one.
Oh my God, how many damn hard drives? There was so much dialogue that was like, I was so excited to get into CTU because I thought, listen, this is going to get me out of the boonies and into like where the real deal was happening. I mean, you don't understand how stoked I was when I read that, like, I was going to start, you know, getting in with like the cool, you know, counter-terrorist unit. It made sense to me because I was like, this is like, of course she has this knowledge and her dad is Jack. This is the perfect fit. What I didn't realize is that I was getting into like some dialogue that made no sense whatsoever. Right. Yes. I mean, get to the beta 562 on pulling up the roadmap. Blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, I had like, we always would have like on the computer screen, our, you know, this dialogue up.
Right.
Like, you know, I think Marilyn had that all the time. It was just like, poor thing, you know?
And then you had a guy that looked like a Vulcan who was questioning everything you were doing.
Oh, yes, right.
Yeah, exactly. Zach Quinto. Everything he did, he would look at you like,
I forgot how do you know that?
What are you, how dare you? How dare you?
We had a lot of, him and I had a lot of great times, actually. We had so much fun working together. And it was... The CTU is actually a lot of fun.
Yeah. No,
more secure about it because it was like you weren't just out in the middle of nowhere. It felt very controlled, you know. Yeah.
So. There is one thing that has run the through line for every conversation we've had with anybody involved in the show is fun. It is like, it's hard work. We did crazy hours, like you said, working through the night. But everybody without fail has been like, it was a blast. Like it was exhilarating. It was crazy. It was fun. And everybody's been animated about it. I haven't had anybody go, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah. No. It was intense. But it was, you know, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. And I mean, you couldn't, like I said, we were spending so much time and it became such a family. As these special shows do, you know, you think about any successful show that's had a run like 24. It can't function without a good crew and a good cast. Like it just can't. And it becomes such a well-oiled machine that everyone just sort of flows and everyone work so well together. And it's really magical when you get on shows like that. It really is. It is. It's awesome. Special. It's a lot of work, but it's really special.
And 24 had a lot of support too from, you know, viewers and even the network too. Fox was good with 24.
You know, our billboards were on the back of, you know, behind the picture of every World Series while we were on. I mean, Fox had their support. And well, I mean, as I think, I feel like Joel Cerno and, you know, Robert Cochran and Howard Gordon, I mean, they created a show that, you know, they couldn't help, but I mean, it was such a success that, you know, you had to. I mean, it was their biggest show. It was the viewers and the ratings, and, you know, coming off of that and going on to other shows, and you go like Happy Endings, and it was like that little, you know, we were like the little train that were just, you know, just trying to get up the mountain, and every week would be like, oh, 5 million, oh, you know, or oh we're down to 2.4 million, I'm like, don't tell me the ratings, compared to getting on and being like literally like 20 million out of the gate, you know, it was just a different experience. It was just lights out, crazy madness, you know?
You know what? I want to end with this. What did you enjoy? It's not even a 24 question. What did you enjoy about Happy Endings? What was kind of a favorite memory of yours from doing Happy Endings?
Oh, that was just, it was the first time I got to work with a group of people that were my age.
Right.
So coming off of, you know, 24 and also films like Old School, I was always very much the youngest one.
Sure.
Yeah. If not the kid that couldn't really hang, you know, it was sort of always just felt like I was like the child on set and was treated as such, which was true. But to be able to work with people of my own age that were going through sort of the same things in life. And, you know, we got to kind of party together and hang out together and just love life and do a show that we were just, the bottom line was just to have fun and to make people laugh. It was just so silly. Like, I remember going like, how am I getting paid to just be a goof right now? This is like amazing stuff. So
you were with five other goofs that all, that off screen chemistry must have translated into the on screen, because that is, I mean, I've probably watched that not as many times as 24, but I've probably watched Happy Endings through probably four times.
Well, I'll tell you, the on camera, off camera, the off camera stuff was probably wackier than the on camera stuff. And at many times we were, you know, David Kasp, our creator, was like, you know, would have many meetings with us and pull us aside and go, guys, if you don't figure out how you're going to like keep it on the rails, like the editor is killing me right now. Like he can't even like you know, there's so much improv going on. We can't cut it. It doesn't match.
You need to behave. Is that what he was saying?
Yeah. He's like, you guys got to reel it in. You guys are acting crazy. And like, you know, and when you're doing improv too on a show, it's very complicated, because if you don't stick to one joke or one idea and you get coverage on the other side, it doesn't match. You know, you got to pick what it is that you want to do with it and then go. And it was, but we just wanted to be, we wanted to try things out so much so that we were just sort of all over the place, and definitely on many occasions needed to be reeled in. And, we were a wild group. And I think also very hard for outside, you know, guest cast coming in, because we were so tight knit. So I can imagine it must have been hard for some people, like these guys are nuts.
Exactly.
It was a lot of fun.
Alicia, we are so grateful that you took the time to hang out with us.
This was great fun.
Stories.
It's nice. Thank you.
You're absolutely welcome. And I, you know, it's nice for me too, because I, you know, I don't really get to sit and reminisce and think about it as much, you know. And like I said, 20 years, I can't even fathom that. But it's reality. And wow.
typical barrister.